ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman in the sunny Charlottesville, Virginia, in the studios of the Charlottesville Radio Group. And you know us. We're the podcast where you can listen to great chefs. You can listen to successful food and beverage people and find out what makes them tick, how they become successful. And hopefully you'll be inspired and maybe even a little appalled. Tonight we have Chef Mark Gresge from L'Etoile in Seville. And we're going to find out all about him tonight. You know the restaurant. It's beautiful. It's romantic. I think it's probably been voted most romantic. Has it been voted most romantic before, Mark?
I believe so.
Yeah, you know, I think so. I think I've seen that.
In some of the things that people write on the internet, that's one thing that comes up. You know, I guess guests' reviews.
Do you think that has anything to do with you?
Yeah, a little bit. My wife.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking, was it something you guys, as you put this restaurant together, was it something that you talked about before, or is it you think it's an extension of your personalities?
A little bit of both. What we like about the business is in addition to cooking,
sure,
the hospitality.
Yeah.
The fact that someone makes a decision to come to our place involves a lot, usually a babysitter,
yeah,
a lot of thought, and they're spending their money, and we want to create an atmosphere that is welcoming and part of the experience. And that's, you know, the colors, everything we choose, the rugs on the floor, the
right,
paintings, and we want them to be comfortable. We don't seat our people close together. You know,
I'm
kind of going off on a tangent, but we get a lot of requests for, you know, give me a nice quiet table.
Yeah.
And our rooms are pretty small.
Your whole place.
But we say, well, you know, this is our favorite, which it is in
sure,
all sincerity. And, you know, we try and make that happen for people.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they do seem to say it's a romantic place.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to say from my standpoint, you know, as a local guy and a chef, you know, I've always seen you as like a really sweet person. Now, I've never worked with you. You might be crazy. You might throw things against the wall, kick people like me. And, you know, your wife, too. So I kind of feel like it's an extension. And so, you know, people who've been to L'Etoile, they probably, I think they feel that because, you know, you have been called one of the most romantic restaurants. But now that we're saying something about you, I want to just step back just a little. And I want to find out where you're from. I mean, where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Richmond here in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Went to school through fifth grade, and my dad was transferred to Chicago area. So back then it was called the boonies, but suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it was only 40 minutes out,
uh-huh,
but it was cornfields, and I grew up in a town of 10,000 people.
Right.
My high school was small. I graduated 125 people in my class.
Nice.
And so, pretty Midwestern.
Yeah, Midwestern, corn-fed.
Okie-dokie upbringing.
Yeah. And is there anything in that upbringing that you think led you towards the culinary arts?
Again, it would have to be hospitality.
Yeah.
The inviting people in and sharing food.
Did your family do that? Did they?
They did. They had parties, and it was always fun to see guests coming over and having fun. You know, even as a little kid, you know, go to bed and looking down the stairs and seeing how much fun everybody's
having. You know, I used to like that too. My parents used to have some really nice parties, and they were always like those, remember those 60s parties like they would show on TV? You know, they'd have a cigarette, and they'd have a little bar set up, you know, and everybody would be dressed really nice.
Yeah, and hot plates.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, I remember they had a wine chiller that you could dispense wine. I thought that was always cool. You know, it always came out during the parties.
Yeah. Who did the cooking?
My mom did.
Yeah. Did she do nice cooking for like you come home from school, you know, you have a nice meal laid out, or were you the family that everybody kind of fended for themselves?
No, she cooked. We had a different meal almost every night.
Yeah.
And the routine wasn't there. It was like, you know, spaghetti night, Monday night, or taco night. She would do, I remember beef roulade one night I came home. She pounded the beef flat and with pickle in the center of it, and braised it, and cooked it. We're like, what is this? You know? But then my dad, yeah. you know, there was no choice. It was,
yeah, sure.
Eat this, you know, and we did. And we always had squash, maybe two or three vegetables, a salad. And we ate as a family. It's very important for my family.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
It's funny. And you know, in talking to the chefs that I've talked to, that's kind of the same way that I grew up. And, you know, when they'd say, well, no, you know, we ate a Taco Bell or we did this. It was at first a little shock to me. But now I realize how many different personalities end up, you know, in our business. And there's so many different driving forces. You know, I can tell, you know, by the way you're talking, that when, you know, when your parents had those parties, you were kind of like me. You thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Look how much fun they're having. I'm going to do that one day. You know?
Exactly.
And we like giving parties. That's really fun. So, did you ever like jump in the kitchen with them? Did you have a garden at your house?
Or? We did have a garden. My earliest cooking memories were I put peanut butter on a piece of toast and reheated it.
Yeah.
And I watched it melt and it had more peanut buttery flavor. I'm like, Ma, check this out. This is great. You know,
you invented something.
Yeah, I did.
Peanut butter gratin.
Yes. But we did. We had a garden, a pretty substantial one, and it was the basics. There were tomatoes and nothing really fancy. I remember Brussels sprouts came up, and my dad was like, oh, what are these? You know, because they're tall and pretty ugly when they're growing. You don't know what they are. And my grandma came out and said, oh, those are Brussels sprouts. You know, wait. And then we had those at Thanksgiving. And so that was really exciting.
Now, do you remember having Brussels sprouts saying, wow, these are good, or what the heck?
No, I liked them. I don't think I was too picky.
Yeah.
I do remember an aversion to lima beans and stewed tomatoes when I was a kid. You know, I don't know why.
But don't you think most people, when they come out to eat and you have like fresh Brussels sprouts, you're like, whoa, no Brussels sprouts, no beets. You ever get that?
Oh, all the time. And we say a little faith, you know, like, we'll make a beet soup. Like, I don't like beets. We say the yucco face, you know, when they turn their...
Yeah.
And they say, it's like, well, just try it. And, you know, it's our little faith soup. And they're like, well, what does that mean? You know, you have little faith in it. But, you know, try it. And usually they like it more often than not.
Yeah. So did you you do any kind of sports and that type of thing growing up?
I did. I played, everything. We lived in this neighborhood. Then that's what we did. So baseball, and I played football. Yeah. I hate to say high school football, you know.
No, but high school football, Friday Night Lights.
We had a good team, and we were known for, we had a great coach that he never swore, he never yelled at us, but we would produce, you know, we'd go to the ends of the earth, and just, we were this winning team all the time.
Right.
So, and that carried over. Baseball, I stunk at baseball. The coach was like, catch the ball, Gretzky, as the catcher. Anyway, I'd always drop it. I was the only catcher, so I had to catch for sophomore and the senior team. So I was playing many games, and I still stunk.
Yeah, but you know what? I never was able to play catcher. I could never have someone swing a bat and me see that ball. And I always thought, man, catchers are cool. I don't know how the heck they do this, you know.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. And it's kind of, you know, it's a low profile because you're not, if you miss the ball in the outfield or something, you know, you're...
Yeah,
you're not the hero, but catcher. You're just consistently there, and, you know, contributing when you can.
Yeah, well, that's cool. So did you, any of those things those guys taught you carry over in your management style or your leadership style?
Yeah, I'll have to say our football coach, we installed the idea of team and cohesiveness. And it translates into the restaurant business. You know, we're all there. Everybody's just as important.
Sure.
You know, that door opens at 5 or 5:30. It's showtime, and we all have to be on. And,
yeah, sure.
You know, there can't be a weak link. The guest will pick up on that.
Yeah.
So the coach taught me that, and I remember how we had to tuck in our shirts. He said, you look dirty, you play dirty. Meaning, not like fisticuffs or anything, but just you'll be sloppy. You know, you'll play sloppy. And I always respected that. And then once I swore at another player, and he pulled me out of the game.
No kidding.
We don't play that way. You know, where'd you learn
I'd get pulled out of the kitchen for my whole life.
I know. I know. The kitchen, oh my gosh, you know, yeah. People ask, they see these shows and they'll think, oh, it's this romantic thing, you know. And I mean, you and I know.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we could outswear any sailor if we wanted to.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. And some of the girls that work with us could out. Yeah. So, you know, growing up and everything in Chicago, did you know, like in the high school days, that you wanted to be a restaurateur? Or when did that kind of happen? How did it happen? What did you do after high school?
I went to Michigan State and I studied packaging engineering.
Wow.
I wanted to, and what that is it's soup to nuts, for a cigarette pack to food packaging, pharmaceutical.
Right.
Someone in Alaska with their fresh salmon. How do I get it to Connecticut?
Yeah.
You know, and keep it fresh. And so I studied materials, paper, plastic.
Yeah.
And I took an engineering job up in Gordonsville. And my wife, Vicki, was helping start up a bed and breakfast here in town.
Right.
And the opportunity came. Anyway, I was let go from my job.
Uh-huh.
Very young. The opportunity came up in the bed and breakfast to serve food. And I honestly thought I'd be finger sandwiches to old ladies.
Sure.
And I didn't.
Sure.
You know, I knew the hospitality. I wanted to try it. Like, yeah, I can do this because we cooked for friends.
Mm-hmm.
But to get into the professional part, and we made the decision, yeah, let's go ahead with this. So I went to work at Calf Cafe years ago.
Sure, I remember the Calf Cafe.
Yeah, making salads, you know, plating salads and desserts.
Yeah.
But we didn't have two pennies to rub together.
Mm-hmm.
We were newly married. I think we had $500 and we bought a refrigerator, a Charleston clear door. That was our thing, and a slicer. We didn't have anything. And we actually served on our wedding, not our china, but we had our wedding silver and glasses.
And where was that? At the bed and breakfast?
Yeah, it was at the 1817 at the time on West Main Street.
Sure.
And that was motivation enough.
I remember
I've got to make enough so I can not use my wedding.
You had the little cafe over on the side? Yeah,
In the sunroom there.
Yeah, in the sunroom, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. What years was that?
This is our 18th year, so 93?
Yeah, 93.
We opened up. And I would, get up early, you know, not knowing what we were doing.
Sure.
We didn't even have a business plan. You know, had we known, maybe I would have taken another path. But we just stuck to it. And I would get up, run the tea room, then I'd run over to Calf Cafe. And I was working there 6 nights a week and just constant cycle of figuring this business out.
So you were learning a lot, right?
I was.
During that period of time. What'd you do after that? I mean, where did the tea room end and the rest of your career begin? Did you guys have that for quite some time? Or?
We were there for 6 years, and we got some catering jobs with the university.
Right.
And so we're like, hey, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah.
You know, we can pull this off. And I still worked evenings, Calf Cafe. I worked for a while at Memory & Company.
Sure.
When John took it over.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot there. You know, it was an open kitchen.
Yeah. You know, John listens to Chew the Fat.
Okay. Hi, John. You know, I have to tip my hat to him. He gave me that opportunity and taught me a lot. So that was a lot of fun. And that, you know, that was very influential because we were making, it was all scratch and pasta. And it was just he and I and, you know, a couple other people.
Yeah.
Go man go to get ready for service, but it was fun and you had to learn to be efficient. And
I've always liked that space over there.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And Memory, she was a pretty nice lady.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I hired her son at Clifton back in the day,
Sebastian,
to be our maitre d'. And I hired him just because his name was Sebastian Buchdrucker. And I thought, you know, if anybody is meant to be a maitre d', it doesn't matter if he even knows what he's doing. It's a perfect name. But you know what? He was really phenomenal. He was a great maitre d'.
He was. And I worked with him at Calf Cafe.
Yeah.
And he ran the front of the house.
Yeah, great maitre d'. I'll tell you what I remember about Calf Cafe. I remember sitting outside and having something to eat and having this really good Alsatian wine. And I remember it just being one of the best days. You know, when you have those days?
I do.
You're just like, wow, this is beautiful. And, you know, the thing about Charlottesville, Virginia, and when the weather is perfect, and it's just beautiful. You know, it's as nice as any place in the world, I think.
It is. Gosh, I like Carter's Mountain to go up there.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, just the view and the fact that it's still an orchard and not hotel or whatever it could be. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if it's zoned or not. And it's funny, you were talking about the perfect day. A friend of mine came, and we were up there, apples, and he bit into an apple, and he said, this is what it's supposed to taste like. You know, this whole experience.
Sure, yeah.
This tastes like the perfect apple. So maybe it kind of ties
in. Yeah,
I've
had that experience up there, actually. That same experience with my grandchildren.
Oh, wonderful.
But, I love that place. So you ended up doing L'Etoile. How does all come about?
We knew we had to expand. We were serving lunch for 6 years, and it was just lunch.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And the catering was there, but we were still a little poverty-level living. You know, our income was nothing. And dinner was the next step. So this opportunity came up, and the space we're in now was the revolving door. It was Edgar's and Stella's. And
I remember it was Edgar's.
And it ended up as Bistro Baleen.
Mm-hmm.
And we were working with some of the commercial real estate people. And they said, hey, this place is available. And we went in and we took a look. Yeah, I think we could do it. But at the time, it was just the downstairs. Oh, it was the Cotton Exchange years before.
Right, yeah.
It's funny, a lot of those folks still come in. Can I poke my head in?
Yeah.
Always, you know. Mi casa, su casa.
Yeah, yeah.
But we came in, and the landlord offered us the upstairs. We have three dining rooms upstairs and some dry storage.
And so, I didn't know that.
And so we said, and we moved some doors around. It was pretty minimal.
Mm-hmm.
No paint, and we just widened some doors and put a new set of stairs. And I think that's what helped us. It's kind of a blessing and a curse, because some people will come by and like, well, no one's in there. You know, they're downstairs, but everybody's upstairs.
Right.
Or, you know, vice versa.
Well, I think you have a lot of curb appeal. I'm going to tell you that, because when I drive past, you get sometimes the candles and the windows and, you know, where it's located, it feels good to me. So, and I'm one of those people that I go on my instincts and my senses, my chefy senses, you know. I look at a place, and because I always taught people, it's everything from, you know, the way the place looks, the lighting, the way it smells, the music when you walk in, the way, you know, the way you're represented right at the door, all the way through to the food, you know, it's everything. And so I like your curb appeal, and I think you guys do a great job at that. Let me ask you now, you went in from, you know, working at Caff Cafe, doing some membering company with John, you know, learning about those things, and then going and opening, you know, kind of a fine dining restaurant, which, you know, is kind of romantic and everything. How did you, how did you really think in the beginning what kind of food you were going to do, or how did you come up with this name?
Well, we still were the Tea Room, mm-hmm. because we had that brand recognition.
Sure.
And as far as the concept, it was just some that I wanted to cook.
Right.
And it was challenging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never having running dinner, it's a different animal from lunch completely.
Right.
But it was a challenge. You know, I guess we weren't pigheaded. I guess we were confident that, we can pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to match the atmosphere as well, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
We knew that the guests were going to come in and have hopefully a couple courses and really enjoy themselves.
So what was your idea with L'Etoile? Did you want something that represented France? Was that like a conscious decision for you, or did that just name just came like bing?
Well, this is what happened. We were the Tea Room, and the ladies who lunched were coming, but their husbands weren't coming for dinner.
Yeah.
Like, something's, you know, we've got to change.
And right.
What are you guys, you know?
Yeah.
And so we asked a good friend of ours now, but we said, you know, she was in college at the time.
Right.
You guys are hip and young. What do you think? And one of her friends said, L'Etoile. And I don't even know what that means at the time. And it's French for star. And we were in the Star Hill neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we used French techniques in our cooking.
Right.
That's perfect. So we did that. And kind of our concept at the time, the friend who ate the apple.
Sure.
He's from out of town. And he said, when I come to Charlottesville, what do I get? You know, Chicago, I get pizza, an Italian beef, or you know, Kansas City ribs. That's a, and he said, what do I get in Virginia? And I said, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't
know. I've struggled with that myself for years.
I know. You know, what is the Virginia food, and what is, where is our culinary heritage?
Yeah.
So that's how I started on this, I guess, journey. I went, Monticello, the birthplace of all this. Sure. Like, what did they grow up there? What, you know, what did he eat? And I went to Williamsburg and was talking with the gardeners there.
Yeah.
And the guy was in the costume, I guess. And hey, when you're off, can I talk to you, you know, in not 1700 speak, you know?
Sure, yeah.
But that was really informative, too. And I just wanted to find out.
Yeah, I like that because I think a lot of, you know, younger guys, you know, they get in the kitchen and they're really not thinking that through more. They're thinking, what can I do that's really cool and will make me look like the greatest chef that ever walked on the face of the earth? And I see that in people sometimes in their face, so they don't really have a connection. And I think Charlottesville had all kinds of restaurants. And I think it's kind of a cosmopolitan town. But you were onto something, you know, really thinking about this in that kind of holistic way. What is Charlottesville? And, of course, Thomas Jefferson was the first gourmet. So that was a good call.
Yeah, it was just... I was just trying to figure it out. I guess ignorance, you know, like, well, yeah, what is it? And then it came down to...
Or brilliance. It doesn't have to be ignorance.
Well, at the time, you know, I was just... Or not knowing sure. what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, through asking people and like pole beans are our heritage.
Yeah, yeah.
And then squash, yellow squash.
Sure.
That was cultivated in Colonial Williamsburg.
Yeah.
You know, part of living in Jamestown, they had to have a garden. As a citizen of that area, a garden was, you had to.
Yeah.
Or you're kicked out. So, and, you know, like, well, what did they grow? And pretty simple things that could be dried or cured and then put away for later.
Cool. So your first, so you named it L'Etoile, and... how have you seen your menu kind of evolve from, and you as a chef and as a culinary leader, also a restaurateur, how long now has it been since you changed that name?
It's been 9 years.
Yeah. And how's it evolved now from that first menu all the way through?
Well, it was pretty bistro. You know, we were shooting from the hip, the first menu.
Yeah.
We had an idea of what we wanted to do. You know, the proteins and vegetables, but then it turned into, and it's through the people that we've worked with, different chefs that have come
in. You know,
hey, have you thought about this? It sounds great. Let's run with it. You know, kind of bouncing ideas off each other. And, but you know, we want to maintain, we don't want, you know, Asian fusion or we want to kind of stay true to what we're doing here.
What do you have, right now that you're particularly proud of or something that you're using that you feel good about, you know?
Well, I almost hate to say it, but things from my own garden in my backyard that my daughter and I planted together.
Yeah, you should say that. You don't have to hate it. You know, because you think people think you're lying, right?
I know.
Don't lie to me, Mark. Where did you get the food?
I know that. Well, I guess, we just hired a new chef and he's 2.5 weeks into it and he's trying to figure all this out, and I said, you know, well, we'll get through this together.
Yeah,
you know, you just A, and how the restaurant runs, and B, what we're trying to do. But we just got some chickens in this week from Timber Creek Organics.
Yeah, and I saw an email from them. How are they?
Great. Zach and Sarah. He's really he takes it very seriously and knows what he's doing. You know, young man, he has the energy. It's fantastic. So we're working with this chicken, and he's like, well, you know, what do you suggest? Well, let's break it down. So we made ossobuco out of the legs.
Nice.
And Jonathan, he boned the thighs, and he was going to stuff them and tie them.
Yeah.
And he brought me up a taste today. He's like, what do you think? Oh, God, it's beautiful. You know, fresh.
Yeah.
Just fresh. You know, just a little salt and pepper and lemon. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And then we airline the breasts and you know, whatever we can get now, the farmers are
yeah, sure
calling. And
It's just going to get better for the next couple months, right?
It is.
Which is really neat. So, about LaToie and your work with your wife, what is kind of her role over there?
She runs the business.
Yeah.
She, everything, soup to nuts.
Payroll.
She's our accountant, payroll, mm-hmm. advertising, consultant. She does everything. I'm pretty much, general manager, back of the house. Of course, I work closely with Catherine, our front of the house manager.
Sure.
But, Vicky, I guess, she's the nuts and bolts.
Yeah. What would you say then, how do you feel? You've been working with her now for, what is it? How long? 18 years?
18 years.
That's awesome, huh?
I love it.
She still likes you?
Yeah, I know. through that process, it's funny. Some people say, I would love to do it. I actually had a friend who had that opportunity. He's like, I couldn't stand it, How do you guys do it? But we've learned to, what's important?
Yeah.
Cut to the chase. There's no dancing around, especially when we're working together during service.
Sure.
It's, I need this, and how can we solve the problem?
Yeah, right.
So, we don't bring it home either. I mean,
yeah. Well, this is a dream for a lot of people. We have all these people that are going to chef schools, restaurant management schools, and I think a majority of them, when they hit those schools, because I had the opportunity to teach at Cornell at the hotel school. And a majority of these young people, when they get there, their mind is in hospitality and entrepreneurship and maybe one day being able to do something. Now, by the time they graduate, they may decide, I want to be a consultant. I want to, I'm going to sell wine or I'm going to start a wine company. But not all of them stay with it. But people have a dream and, have a restaurant, work with their spouse, have that kind of life, that culture that you see so much when you go to Europe and, that's been kind of there for forever and ever, these families, growing up in the business. What would you say to, somebody who's listening, if they say, I really want to do that, what would be your number one piece of advice to help them get to where you are?
Gosh.
And do you even feel like where you are is like really cool and special?
I do.
Do you ever have those moments where you forget?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But then looking back on, just where I live, mm-hmm. I live out in Crozet and my family, sweat of the brow type of work. We've come to this point in my life.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, I'm very proud and I'm mm-hmm. humbled by it as well. And then I also know that tomorrow, it could be it's a house of cards.
Yeah, sure.
All this could just.
Well, you've had, I won't say a setback, but, they've had all that. Construction, on the bridge and, your sidewalk was closed. I remember a few years back, gone past, and I'm sure that was some stressful times. How do you deal with that stress?
We, Vicky and I, we look at our processes and we're like, okay, what do we need to do? Our costs just everything. And then you do scratch your head. Okay, why aren't people coming in? Was it something I did or said and, you start seeing demons everywhere, but you just, I guess, slow and steady mm-hmm. is our philosophy. And also, I have the last man standing, after September 11th and the economy tanked and
mm-hmm.
said, I'm going to be the last man standing. And whatever it takes, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And not compromise the guests that come in, they deserve the best. So we're not going to compromise in their end, but whatever cost cutting. Back to your original question, if it has to be the love of the game, because we're not going to get rich off of this.
Yeah.
Maybe some people do, but for us, like a mom and pop place, it's providing for us and it is a love of the game
mm-hmm.
of, do you want, maybe the chef, if you have your own business, you can be as creative as you want.
Right.
But you have to find out what they're willing to accept, for your concept. And, it's grueling. It's hard. It's long hours. Yeah.
How much do you care about what the people tell you in the dining room?
Everything.
Yeah.
Even from no criticism or concern is taken very seriously.
Yeah.
Even online, mm-hmm. where you know you don't know the person's angle, or you don't know them.
Sure.
But everything is legitimate, and mm-hmm. even I don't want to knock someone's review of us, but if there's something so absurd, there's still something in there that
right,
we can learn.
Right.
And we'll discuss.
Are you talking about some of the blogs, Urban Spoon, Yelp, Chowhound?
Exactly, those.
Yeah.
But, sometimes you wonder if, what did I do to them? What happened? But
I've had a few of those. We search them out and destroy. No, I'm just kidding. I know some people have really lost it over those, but you care. And I think it's one of the main things of a great restaurant, because if you wouldn't care, then, you wouldn't probably have that most, that romantic, very nice atmosphere that you have. It would be more, look, you're here for me. I'm the man, and it's not like that, which is really cool. What do you love though the most now? Because you said earlier, the love of the game. What do you love the most about this business?
My day starts pretty early, and our lunch chef, yeah. Adam, I like coming in, and yeah. he's there doing his work.
Right.
I guess opening the door, it sounds kind of hokey,
uh-huh.
but, it's a new day, and off we go. And I love watching the guests come in.
Uh-huh.
Like I said earlier, they made a decision to come here, and I've got to deliver on my end now.
Sure.
They made their commitment, and I love that.
That's true. I feel the same way too. I could hug every one of them that comes through the door.
they don't know it, and you're standing there and you're like, hey, glad you're here. But yeah, sincerely, I do like that. I like the people we work with, and mm-hmm. I like during a particularly busy evening or even a slow day, the cohesiveness of the people that we work with.
Sure.
Everybody's... The main goal is the customer, or not even the guest mm-hmm. that comes in.
Yeah, the guest.
And, it's all hands on deck. Everybody's working so hard to make that happen.
Yeah.
And that, even in the middle of, or in the weeds, as we say mm-hmm. in this business, but, I stop and think, look what we're doing.
Yeah,
this
sure.
is amazing. And it's still astonishing.
Yeah, that's neat, isn't it? So let me ask you this now. Did you and your wife come up with a specific vision that then you... when people start working for you, or even during the time they're working, is there a way that you give them vision, or you just open and you go to town and don't, is there something there? Do you give them a specific, hey, this is what I want the place to feel like? Is that part of your thing there?
It's kind of half and half. Mm-hmm. We want the people that we work with to want to be there with us. And it's kind of self-explanatory, you know, because some people, that's not the style of restaurant they want to work in.
Mm-hmm.
They want and super high volume.
And you can tell pretty quickly.
Yeah, pretty quickly.
Once they start to work there.
yeah. Yeah.
That's a neat thing about employees in a restaurant, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever looked at someone and just said, look, you're just not fitting in?
We have a couple times.
Yeah.
And you always feel bad too,
Yeah.
Because either they're trying really hard, or sometimes it's just evident,
Yeah.
Or they'll tell us, this isn't my space. And, fair enough.
True.
You tried, so.
True. I think that's a specific challenge, employees, because it's work, isn't it, to find the right team?
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
And you're always on the first date, when you meet mm-hmm. them, and hey, do they like me?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm doing my best, and then. The shininess wears off after a while, but hopefully, through that relationship, you can figure each other out and work.
Well, we've had some of your people in at the barbecue exchange, and they're real sweet. They're good kids. So now we've learned a little bit about, your life and, how you've come up through your restaurant, kind of your kind of vision, or the way that you run the restaurant, you and your wife, how you feel about the guests. What about you as a person? What do you think are your kind of strengths, leadership wise, and not even leadership wise, just there's things there. What do you find or think? Or don't you think? Are you one of those people like, you know, I don't even think about myself?
You know, I don't. And then I forgot who said it, but if you can do it, it ain't bragging.
Yeah.
I do have to start thinking about that.
Yeah.
And
I can tell you probably don't sit around thinking how great you are, but
no.
Is there, you know.
Well, you know what?
You could probably talk about your wife all day, right? All the great things she
sure.
is. But what about yourself? I mean, is there, you know, a particular thing that you know, like, you know, for instance, with me, I'm a fantastic crisis manager.
Okay.
I might be the greatest crisis manager in the world, and but there's a problem with that. I'm always in crisis. So that's why I've learned how to manage it. How about you? Is there something?
You know, I saw a movie when I was a kid. It was 12 O'Clock High. I think it was Gregory Peck. It was a World War II movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was the general asking the men to fly mission after mission, but he always flew the point.
Sure.
He was like, I'll lead you guys. And, you know, at first, they're like, yeah, kiss off. We don't want to do this.
Yeah.
We don't want to die. And so that had an impression on me. You know, I'll fly the point. I've done anything. I don't ask them to do anything that I'm not willing to jump in and do. I guess maybe that leadership.
Sure.
You know, I've cleaned toilets. I'll do it all.
Yeah.
And I try and lead by example and be sincere about it, too. Because then I found if I just go down and here's a list of things that need to be done, you know.
Yeah.
I don't get the response of, oh, okay, you know,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, right.
You know, and if you're in there with them, and now at this point in my career, you know, working side by side, or, you know, we need a dishwasher coming in and doing it, then
yeah,
I just want to show that, yeah, I can do that. I'm trying to think of another attribute, maybe stamina.
Stamina's a good one.
You know, and I...
For this business, stamina's a good one.
And not, you know... After I get up in the office, like, oh, my back.
Well, you know what I always liked, you know, especially when I was at Keswick with all the young guys, I'd be like, I'm 50 years old. Look what I'm doing. I've been here from 7 and it's 10, and I'm giving them all this crap. And then I go in the office. I sit down like, oh, God, my back and my head hurts, you know.
I know. Yeah, you can't show them that chink.
Yeah.
Chink in my armor.
That's kind of neat. Well, I think, you know, we've gotten a lot of good material about you. I think, is there something you like to say about the restaurant for people that are listening? Is this, or let me ask another thing. Is this it for you? This is it. You're going to go into the sunset with L'Etoile, or do you have aspirations?
Yes and no. We cater and I'd like to, it's all baby steps for us, but I'd like to expand the catering.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason why it's, you reinvent yourself every location.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
We've cooked in garages, closets,
yeah.
You name it. And you have to produce. There's no choice, you know. So it's fun to, I like that challenge of showing up to an offsite event and let's go. Figure this out.
I like that you like that because my wife, she hates the catering part. And I keep her as, you know, out of it as far as I can. But sometimes I need her help. And, but it takes a special person to really like off-premise catering. I mean, it really does. The fact that you like, you know, showing up to someone's house and they're like, no, you're not using my kitchen, but here you go. You got this part of the garage. I moved a car out and the golf bag, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the dog. We've had events where I turned around and the dog has eaten literally half of my food. And they're like, oh, poopsie smoopsie. I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. You don't understand. You know, I'm 30 miles away from my restaurant. I don't have anything out here.
Yeah, right. You know?
Stuff like that has happened. But
where's the dog? This is tasty.
Yeah, I know.
That's hilarious. So you think catering and, but keeping L'Etoile and,
yeah, once we, you know, people have asked us, you should open up another place. And I think, well, once we've maximized, you know, every seat is full every single night, then I'll consider.
There you go.
Because, I still want to be there. And I would feel personally just too stretched out. And I don't know if that's wimpy or not, but I need one foot in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And then, you know, catering.
There you go. That. And so... about yourself, listeners are listening. This is out there for eternity. What do you want them to know about you, your family, or whatever that they don't already know? So when they come in there, they can sit down and say, you know, wow, I really know Mark. Look how he did this place. You know, look how the place looks. I feel him. What is it about that you want for eternity people to know about you?
Oh my gosh, for eternity.
You're a good looking guy. I like your glasses.
Thanks. So thanks.
I've always liked that style. Thank that just you. Doesn't work for me.
Thank you.
I had green glasses on today. I didn't realize that they were my wife's, but, you know, I'm a barbecue man, so it's yeah. kind of weird. People are like, what are those glasses? I say, you got a problem with these.
No. Yeah, what are you going to do?
I'm the pork man.
Yeah. That's a tough question.
Yeah, you know, it's not a trick question.
It's not a trick question.
It's just, look, you know, I think...
that I guess we'll do our best to make your experience.
Yeah.
Because food is so important. It's when a baby's born, we have food.
Yeah,
the
sure.
whole cycle of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every major event in our life, you know, graduation and then to a funeral.
Yeah.
Everybody comes back to some kind of food, a potluck or, you know, something.
Yeah.
And to be part of that, I guess.
Families are bonded around, you know, around food and friends too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I take that pretty seriously. So, you know, I will always give my best, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not any deeper than that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any.
It's right on the surface.
Yeah, yeah.
You want people to be happy.
Yeah, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I guess that's it. Because we have people who come in and get engaged and, like, mm-hmm. wow, we're part of their fabric now. You know, we're
for
part
the
of
rest
that story.
Of their life, yeah.
Yeah. I got engaged over biscuits and gravy at this country place outside of Chicago.
Nice.
You know, but still they talk about it, like, you know, we'll come mm-hmm. in years later and like, we got engaged, like, oh yeah, I heard about you guys, you know. So it's fun to be part of that too.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard from Mark Gresge from L'Etoile. Been around Charlottesville for a long time, and you know, hopefully you know him a little bit better now, and especially the fact that you know, when you experience his life, which is his restaurant, you know, he and his wife, when you come to his restaurant, you're going to experience him, and you're going to get some caring and some attention. So, Mark, thanks so much for talking with me tonight.
Thank you very much.
I think people will be real interested, and you're a great guy. I like talking to you, and hopefully people will like listening to you. We'll find out. So, folks, comment. Let us know what you think of Mark. Yeah, yeah. Let us know what you think of Mark. Put it right on our chewfat.net. So you can go to our blog, chewfat.net. Most of you will be listening to this from SevillePodcast.com, which is Sean and Mike's site with many really, really nice podcasts. You know, the Ragged Mountain Running Store podcast and Snows and Susie Said and some of the other ones. It's a great website. Check their, check their podcasts out too. And if you're listening, go to our chewfat.net. There, all the archives are there. All the chefs that we've talked to are there. You can listen to them, and you can sound out. We like when you sound out. Tell us what you think. And go to L'Etoile, taste the food, and get to know Mark Gresge. Chef Craig, Chew the Fat out.
I've heard this before. I know I have. This song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I was wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade. But I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record. And it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one, till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie. I put it."